Okay, the meeting's being recorded again, so we can commence. Thanks for the update on auctions, Russ. Do you want to add something about the use of funds from yesterday? Thanks, Christine.
Good morning. This is Christine Ouellette. So we've been getting a lot of questions about the use of funds. So as Russ said, the funds from auctions have been segregated for now, and the board has on their discussion agenda for this week how they intend to consult with the community on the use of proceeds for auctions, from auctions. So they fully intend to consult with the community and collaborate on a direction, decision-making process on how to use those funds, and they're beginning those discussions internally this week. As Akram mentioned in XCOM meeting last night, we anticipate having more visibility into the amount of auction proceeds in totality early in 2015. So after we've gone through a few more months of auctions, we still expect a number of auctions to be canceled. It seems as though just having the auction scheduled is driving a lot of contention resolution amongst its applicants. So it's a bit early to forecast what the entirety of the proceeds might be, if we're talking $14 million or $100 million. What to do with those funds and the options could be significantly different. So we expect that by early next year, by the Marrakesh meeting, that we'll have more information on a forecast of those funds.
And a sense of what the process would be.
Correct, and that will also give the board an opportunity to determine their process for consulting with the community and to put that out for discussion as well.
Great, thanks. Thank Christine. Can we open that? Any questions from the floor about auctions? Tim.
Tim Switzer. Christine, the one thing I would encourage, and I know this is at a board level kind of a discussion, but the process for determining the use of the funds, irregardless of what the amount might be, I would encourage that to get started sooner than later, and just at least put some parameters. And yes, I understand that $14 million versus $100 million is a different discussion for what the funds may be used for, but just to start building the parameters for the community to start providing input around how these funds might be used, because this will not be an easy answer. I mean, I can just imagine this is going to have a lot of input from the community, and it will take time. So the sooner we get started with that, the better. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Any other questions or comments on auctions and use of auction funds?
Hey there, Jim Prendergast. Russ, I saw in the net proceeds report that you put out for the auctions, $10,000 fees for each canceled auction. Is that what triggers that? Is if the three folks decide to settle in the next 2 days, then ICANN pays the auction house a $10,000 fee, or?
Yeah. So in the statement of work, we have a cancellation fee for an auction, and we determine schedule. A scheduled auction is right at the time when we send those confirmation of the dates to the participants. We do that about 7 weeks in advance of the auction to give all the participants enough time to get their bank account information set up properly with the auction provider and the escrow provider to get those funds transferred into the auction account in advance of the auction so that there's not a last-minute panic to get several hundred thousand or more dollars wired in.
Well, more than internationally. So it's 7 weeks out is the sort of cutoff date.
Yeah, right now we're doing it about 7 weeks out. It's something I'm willing to talk about with the community as an opportunity to possibly save more proceeds. The auction rules state we need to confirm the auction dates to the participants 21 days in advance of the auction. So that would leave 2 weeks to get the funds into into the deposit account. We've been trying to do it earlier to give participants about a month to do that process. So it's really, we've been doing it because we heard feedback that, you know, it's going to take some time to get these funds transferred.
Sure.
There's international participants that make it a little more complex. But we're here to facilitate the process for the community. As long as it's a level playing field, we're comfortable sliding back closer to that 21 days as long as everyone's okay with it. But we've been operating on a 35-day cycle to try and give everyone enough time to get that money and not have a panic 6 days before the auction or something.
Got it. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim, and thanks, thanks Russ, again. The next agenda item we have is indirect contention as it relates to auctions, and there has been some discussion around indirect contention. There is a separate session for applicants who are directly involved in indirect contention scheduled for later this week. So I think unless there's a burning desire to talk in detail about this, probably a quick update on the process for the indirect contention would be good, Russ. Thanks.
Sure. Thanks, Steve. So we've been working real hard with the auction provider over the last several months now on a solution for indirect, for having an auction with direct and indirect contention in the same set. It's a complex topic. There's a lot of trades you got to do to make sure that you're being fair to everyone and that it's clear to all participants what's going on in the auction at any given point in the time, and that you're respecting those contention relationships. And what I mean by that is you're not creating direct contention where only indirect contention exists. So there's potential where more than one applicant can prevail from an indirect contention set because they're not in direct contention with one another. So we've been working really hard on that. I think we have a real good solution in place that we're ready to roll out. We're going to put that for public comment to make sure we get community feedback and buy-in on the process. We're staying true to the guidebook. It's going to use ascending clock auction. It's going to be second price based result. I can share more about that in the direct session. Free to take comments from you.
Thanks, Russ. Anybody got any questions or comments on indirect contention? Great. The next agenda item is concerning community priority evaluation, which, again, I'm looking to GDD for some a brief update.
So last week, we published three more community priority evaluation results. There's currently one in process that's been invited, one other applicant that's been invited to CPE, and there are, I believe it's 10 more who are yet to be invited that are ineligible for various reasons, change requests, SCAC advice, accountability mechanisms. The results of some of the evaluations for CPE have gotten a lot of attention. I would just like to state that the outcomes and the results of the CPE evaluations are not a judgment by ICANN or the panel on the existence of communities, on the existence of such communities. It is an evaluation of the applications as they were submitted against the set of criteria in the guidebook and the detailed evaluation criteria as were published for CPE. So there's no intended reflection on the various members of those communities. Simply, it is an analytical evaluation by the panel of the applications.
Thanks, Christine. Do we have comments from the floor on the community priority evaluation topic?
Hi, it's Susan Payne here from Valides. I did have a question about the process now, in the sense of when, and others may already know the answer to this, but when there's been an evaluation decision, what happens then? Is it something, does the board have to in any way adopt it, or does the applicant just go back into the contention set?
So similar to the other evaluations and other processes on the program, the board doesn't have to get involved under. So if an applicant prevails CPE, they earn 14 or more points and earn priority. They win the rights to the string and win the rights to the contention set, assuming no other members of the contention set also prevail in community priority evaluation. And if they don't earn the 14 points and the priority, then they go back into the contention set, and eventually we get it scheduled for an auction, and either it self-resolves or we resolve it through an auction.
So we don't wait for the other applicants in the contention set, like with an auction. After an auction, the prevailing applicant moves forward, and we consider the contention set resolved. The team updates that contention set page. The contention set shows a status of resolve, that little graphic changes. So we reflect that. I'm sure you're all aware that there have been a number of accountability mechanisms triggered, so those contention sets are, those applicants who are prevailing are moving very quickly through the process due to some of the other mechanisms.
Thanks, Christine. Stanton.
Stanton Hammock, right side. If the contention set can now move forward after CPE, does it get scheduled at the end of the auction schedule? You know, right now we plan to go through March or April, I think, March. Or can it move up in the schedule based on, you know, available slots if other strings drop out?
Hi, Stanton. This is Russ. Yes, it can. We'll assess where it fits into the prioritization based on the lowest priority number in the set. We'll assess the lead time to get to an auction and then the availability or capacity within an auction. As you know, we try and hold the auctions to about 20 contention sets or so when we schedule them each month. And so if there's capacity, say, in February, but we have auctions scheduled in March, we try and get in February. So hopefully that answers the question. And then, as you know, we have both the advancement possibility and the postponement possibility. So up to 45 days before an auction takes place, all the members of the contention set can request to advance the auction, and that would need to be 45 days before the desired date. And if you wanted to postpone the auction at least 45 days before the current scheduled date, we need to get a form from every member of the contention set requesting to postpone.
I have a follow-on question from that, actually, as an interest for the auctions working group. What is the process that triggers the kind of the initial placement of the set back into the auction? The usual auction rules to, you know, drag forward and drag back and all that stuff applies, but is there the sense of that, are those sets already placed in auctions and they were just on a hold status, or they get opened up to auction, or do they need to be slotted into? If there's an auction that was full with 20 slots, do you make an extra slot available?
So typically what we do is we wait for the eligibility criteria that are outlined in the auction rules before scheduling the auction. So we wait until it is theoretically eligible to go to auction, and then we schedule it into the next available auction according to its priority. And then if something later puts it on hold, we'll leave it in that auction for the time being until we get direction to put it somewhere else. But on the off chance that hold resolves itself well in advance of the auction, we'll be able to maintain the auction date.
Great. Thanks, Russ. Any other comments or questions? John?
I guess as one of the applicants that did not pass last week, I'd like to make maybe just say this on the record. We found the process very difficult to navigate, particularly where it seemed to us that some of the rules or the application of the rules in the guidebook seemed to change from the time we filed the application to when the determination was done. And I don't want to get too granular here, but it seemed like, you know, we just completely didn't understand maybe what something meant. And, you know, pretty intelligent people worked on the application, so it shouldn't have been that hard. I will say anecdotally, when we saw that we opened up the evaluation, saw that we got a 3 out of a possible 16, it was kind of like, okay, that was funny. Now send us the real one. So it does seem that there was some criteria applied inconsistently between determinations. We feel like we wish we'd gotten one of the other panelists. And speaking of that, we really have an issue with the total opacity of the EIU process. Unsigned determinations feel unfair. We don't know who said or did these things, what their qualifications are. That just seems inconsistent with the transparency that ICANN typically seems to exercise.
Thanks for that, John. Jeff?
So just this is Jeff Newman. Sorry, my voice is going. Just to ask a clarification question. So you said, I know ICANN has no role in the evaluations. And so when the decision gets to you, do you just then post it, whatever it says, or is there any review by anybody at ICANN of the decision, or is it literally just posted?
So, thank you, Jeff. We receive preliminary reports from the panel that are reviewed. We look at completeness. We have conversations, as we have with all of the initial evaluation panels, about the process that they followed. We endeavor to ensure that the criteria were applied consistently. Where we have questions about rationale, we have those discussions. So, yes, we do see the preliminary versions of the reports before they are published. And then once the panel finalizes their report, then we do publish that report. We probably put it on our own. Do they create that template? They create the template, and that is the report we publish.
So just to follow up, I think it might be interesting for those that have been reviewed to actually see the questions that ICANN asked of the panelists to understand. I mean, if you can imagine if you ask questions about the rationale, you actually get answers. But I'm sure John and others that did not prevail in community evaluation have their own questions, but they don't have the same opportunity to get their questions answered. So to the extent you can at least post the questions that I can ask back and the answers that you got back, that might be helpful.
So I don't know that we have, but there was a written exchange, there was a review, we received a preliminary report and we had a discussion about it. So I don't know that there's anything more we can publish. I want to thank John and acknowledge the professional way in which you raised your concerns. We certainly appreciate the sensitivity and the importance of these issues. And as I said to you privately, we encourage you to utilize ICANN's accountability mechanisms. As many applicants and other parties in the community have done so as part of the program.
Thanks.
Okay, moving on to the next agenda point regarding the Ombudsman, which I don't believe the Ombudsman's here. Nope. there was a sense that from the previous meeting that there was a sense of wanting to have more transparency to some of the timing and processes of from the Ombudsman. I'm not sure if there's a formal process that we can use to kind of raise those issues from within the NTAG, or there's some channel that can be used that's outside of the process. Krista?
I'll just lean. So your request is to, you want to get some sort of interaction with the Ombudsman to ask questions about, I think Donna's going to clarify. Sorry, this is Krista.
Yeah, just to be clear, at the NTAG session we had in London, the Ombudsman gave an update on some of the accountability requests that have gone to him in relation to some of the application processes. And it was more, and I think, Christine, at that time you said that you would provide a little bit more transparency into how those are managed within the process. And I think the Ombudsman at the time said that he would come back to us and give us in, because we have no visibility into when people are making inquiries of him or you know, requests of him, and there's no time frame or whatever into how long he has to make a determination or anything like that. So, and to me, it was still an outstanding item that we hadn't heard back on how long those processes are taking or where he was and how they impact, I guess, as well.
Thank you, Donna. This is Christine Willett. I think it would be appropriate for the Ombudsman to speak on his own behalf. As you can appreciate, the matters brought before the Ombudsman are considered confidential unless the parties choose to make them public. Let's put it on the list. How about if we put it on the scorecard?
I was just thinking we'll just take it as an action
okay.
item. Rather
great.
Than, and I have a last-minute request, but you can tell me no. But since he's not here for the 10 minutes, I was hoping to maybe just give you guys a 5-minute update on what the registry team is doing to support applicants. It can be later if you know, I know you have other agenda items. We can wait till the end of the meeting to make sure you have time to get through your agenda items. But I will take the Ombudsman topic specifically as an action item and come back to you to let's figure out what he was going to do, and then we'll come back to you with an update.
That'd be great, Krista. We'll do it at the end of the agenda. That's great. Thanks. So the next item is concerning the future of the NTAG, with an update from the working group led by Samantha. And before we get into that, I would like to make a kind of formal initial announcement that we'll be holding XCOM elections for the NTAG in mid-November. I believe. So if anybody is interested in participating in the NTAG at the XCOM level, then do feel free to reach out to any of the current XCOM or the secretaries or previous XCOM members and find out what's involved. But yeah, do get involved more. And November will be the elections. So Samantha.
Hi, everyone. So I sent an email around over the weekend with a quick update about what the working group has kind of circled around. Based off of the conversation we had back in the London meeting in June, the big takeaway that we really took from that was that everyone has really appreciated, the NTAG members have really appreciated the ability of NTAG to, you know, give everyone a unified voice. But the concern is that, you know, as people sign their registry agreements, they no longer have a voting mechanism in NTAG. So the solution that we've kind of come up with as a proposal is to establish a second interest group within the RYSG, the new TLD registries group. So effectively, it would function in similar ways as the NTAG, but it would allow once you sign your registry agreement and you become a fully fledged RYSG member, you would also have a vote in this interest group. So what we're thinking is for a time they would coexist alongside each other, the new TLD registries group and the new TLD applicants group. So we circulated a draft of a charter. I guess at this point we can open it up for questions and discussion.
Great. Thanks, Samantha. Please, comments from the floor or questions about the future of the NTAG and the proposed methodology? Jeff.
Yeah, so can you, Samantha, I missed reading that. Can you just go over kind of the rationale for a new TLD registry interest group as opposed to just being part of the registry stakeholder group? Because there's going to be a tremendous amount of overlap. So can you just kind of explain that a little bit as the rationale?
Sure. And I'll open it up to anyone else in the working group if they want to chime in as well. But my understanding was that, you know, as we move into people delegating their TLDs and resigning their registry agreements, there are still issues that are unique to operators that have emerged from the 2012 round, and that those operators had an interest in having a place where they could have a unified voice that may be different from registries, or I guess traditional or legacy registry operators. I don't know if that's the best phrase for it. But one of the things we wanted to discuss today is potential areas of overlap and potential areas of distinction, and how we can think about some processes to put in place to make sure that those are really differentiated and so there isn't too much overlap.
I mean, just thinking about that, it seems to me that rather than creating another structure for the group, is you kind of do it on an issue-by-issue basis. You know, it just seems like otherwise people are going to go to two sets of meetings, discuss the exact same things, except for those areas that don't overlap. And many of the existing TLDs are moving over to the contracts, or will eventually move over to the contracts that the new TLDs have. So you're going to see less and less areas where maybe one or two registries don't have the same contracts. But everybody, it's the expectation of the legacy TLDs that they'll eventually move over to the new TLD agreements, and it's all going to eventually be unified. In a lot of respects, for example, .biz, we have a lot of the same things as the new TLD registry agreement. Not everything, but a lot of the similar things. And then so for .biz, for example, which one do we belong in, and do we get a vote? It just seems to me that when issues come up, rather than create interest groups around a group of people, you create interest groups around an issue. And I think that's how it was initially kind of conceived. So I totally understand, like, interest groups on GeoTLDs and community TLDs and brand TLDs. But to me, just to create a new TLD registry group seems like a lot of groups that people need to belong in, unless there are issues, right? And so, you know, one of the issues are that John's dealing with, right, and Stephanie and others, of the amendments, right? That's unique to the new TLDs, but we didn't need a new TLD registry group to create a working group to deal with that issue. Anyway, that's just my two cents. We could spend a lot of time talking about voting rights and all these other things with a charter. I just, from my personal opinion, I think it's more a better use of time to do an issue interest group as opposed to just setting up a new TLD registry group. But that's just my opinion and personal opinion. It's not company or anything.
Thanks, Jeff. Any feedback there from the other working group members? John?
Sure, John Nivett. I think it's a good idea. I think there are issues that are unique to new TLD registries. The contract one is probably the most prevalent at this point. There are other issues, name collisions, things like that, that apply only to new TLD registries. And to have an organization and ability to speak on behalf of just new TLD registries is warranted. It's not taking a lot of time or effort. You know, we have a charter pretty much already drafted, thanks to Samantha, and it just gives us the opportunity to speak from the perspective of a new TLD registry. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Any other questions or comments regarding the future of the NTAG from the floor? Jordan?
Thanks. Jordan Buchanan with Google. I guess I sort of land halfway between where John and Jeff are coming in. I do think it strikes me that it would be useful to have some coherent set of people that pay attention to issues around new TLD issues. I do worry a little bit that for a while it seemed like with NTAG we saw a lot of overlap in terms of agenda and discussion in topics between what was being discussed in NTAG meetings versus in the registry stakeholder group meetings. So I guess I'm just curious if you have thoughts on how we would manage that in the new group, so that we just, to Jeff's point, we don't waste a lot of time talking about issues in two places, because that's probably not very efficient.
This might be speaking to my unfamiliarity with the process, but one possible solution that I can think of is instead of having, you know, a separate hour and a half block for a applicant group meeting and then also the full day of the registry meeting, for example, we could just combine them and have, I mean, already the RYSG meeting has a slot for NTAG issues. So, you know, instead of having two separate meetings where everyone talks about the same things, we could have one meeting where everyone's in the same room and discusses it, but then if it does come down to, oh, there's an issue that one group wants to speak or vote or act differently on, they have the means to do that.
Thanks, Samantha. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, thanks. And it also gives us an opportunity to add weight behind a position. So if even if the registry stakeholder group as a whole takes a position, if it's especially if it's unique to new TLD registries, to have another voice can hurt us. So just help us in the political process with ICANN. So again, I think that's absolutely right what Samantha said. It shouldn't take a lot of time. It's self-organizing of an interest group is the whole point of having that provision in the registry stakeholder group charter. And if the new TLDs feel a need to get together and want to add a voice and have a voice to represent new TLD registries, then I'm supportive of that.
Thanks, John.
So I guess when we started this discussion, it was about the future of the NTAG, and I think we kind of acknowledged that the numbers in the NTAG are dwindling. So the NTAG, do we see it become dormant, or you know, how are we going to manage it? Because we understand that there's a next round coming up, so maybe conversations need to happen within the NTAG. As those start to ramp up again, it's been.
We've lost connection.
Okay, so we're not being recorded, but I don't know that that's a big issue at the moment. So I think this is, in my mind, this is kind of a phasing stage as well, because you know, there will be a time where the NTAG will be dormant, but we still need to have a place where we can have discussion around things that are particular to new GTLD stuff. And particularly, you know, I think compliance is one of the issues that is going to bubble along for us for some time. So, you know, maybe we just need somewhere to sit so that we can have those conversations. So maybe this is part of a phasing. As the NTAG kind of slows down, then perhaps those issues that we think are specific to 2012 registries, then there's somewhere to have that conversation. So I think that's kind of part of the context as well.
Thanks, Donna. Jeff.
Yeah, so I this is Jeff Newman. I think having a place to discuss issues is great. I was more commenting on kind of the formalistic rules, the charter. Again, I haven't looked at it, and maybe I just need another copy sent to me, but I know there was a lot of discussion early on when we set up the NTAG. If you voted in the registry stakeholder group, you couldn't vote in the NTAG. I mean, are those similar types of rules? Or, you know, and I know, like, if you look at the mailing lists today, and I keep two separate ones, so it gets, you know, almost invariably, it's identical. You get the same email sent to both lists, and almost everybody sends them both to the registry stakeholder group and to the NTAG. There's very few different mailing lists. And all I'm saying is it may be more appropriate to do issue-by-issue kind of mailing lists as opposed to just two ones that copy. Again, it's not a huge, huge issue, but I'm trying to unify us a little bit more, and that's all.
Thanks, Jeff. John?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we need a separate mailing list because it's an interest group, not of members. So everyone, by definition, will be part of the registry stakeholders group, unlike NTAG, where it's an observer interest group and it's a different situation. But getting back to Donna's point, I absolutely still see the need for a strong NTAG. We still have plenty of issues to work through in this round where a lot of us are still applicants and, you know, working through auctions and CPEs and other things that we're still that are still outstanding. Timing, there'll be stragglers, and So I think having NTAG still remain in place in the current form as an observer interest group would be pertinent and helpful, and getting ready for the next round, that would be good to have it standing. Thanks. I have to apologize. I have to leave. I got called to the principal. Sorry.
Thanks, John.
Sorry, Tim. So I think going back to Jeff's point, and we have had this discussion about the NTAG and the Registry Stakeholder Group previously. I think we need to get clear delineation about, you know, what issues fit where. I think, you know, we started to have that conversation with the RYSG and NTAG. Maybe we need to spend some time kind of thinking about that as to, you know, where the buckets are going to fit in order to get more clarity around how we think this will work.
Tim Switzer, I just want to kind of add to what John and Donna have been saying. I really don't think that we're going to find that the NTAG will have that much time where it is, quote-unquote, dormant. I think ending the first round is well out in front of us still, and I think then the looking ahead to round two, the role that NTAG can play with GDD on starting to, you know, get an advanced look at lessons learned and where do we go from here. I think a lot of shaping of how we make, you know, round two and what it looks like will be a key thing I think NTAG will be doing. So I think NTAG may have a slower period, but I'm not sure it's going to have necessarily a dormant period. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Any further input from... We have no input. Any further input?
I'm putting the agenda up just as a document.
Thanks. Any further input on future NTAG issues as a wrap-up from anybody? Or
I'll just say, as a next step, maybe what the working group can take a whack at is putting together a list of what specific areas each group would deal with, and maybe that can be another point of discussion as we keep dealing with this. So I can take a draft, a whack at drafting that and send it around to you guys. So thanks.
Thanks, Samantha. Okay, next agenda item, we have, I'm hoping we have an update from Crystal.
Reg,
I'm here on behalf of Crystal.
Hi, Reg.
This is Reg Levy with Minds and Machines.
Reg, do you want to come and sit down?
No, I'll just give a quick update. This is supposed to be quick.
Okay, yeah. Great.
I don't have internet anyway. So the GDD group has met with itself and also with ICANN staff multiple times. We've got the scorecard in a good place where we've crossed some things off mutually. We're working forward on some of the other issues. And we've moved on toward SLA /SLT, things that ICANN can commit to us. Does anyone have any particular questions or things specifically that you want to know if we've addressed or not? I think that the scorecard has been sent around to the wider group, but as someone said, everyone sends everything to everyone, so I just assume that everything I've seen, everyone else has seen as well.
Any questions for Reg on GDD feedback?
Or for Crystal.
Or for Crystal, yeah. That can be answered by Reg on Crystal's behalf. No? Okay, thanks, Reg.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, next on the agenda is an update from Maxim on the GDD portal users group.
Maxim Alzoba. Fight it. There is a group called GDD Portal User Group. It's mostly oriented on the B2B interface, where we file cases, where I can open cases. Actually, at this moment, somewhere online, not here, you can access a new interface of GDD portal. lots of small but